Okay, if we get going, so scrutiny commission. So please note this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Officer who is administering the meeting. Okay, so if we get going. So if we start with item number one, so apologies.
No apologies, Chair.
Lovely. Item two, so minutes from the previous meeting. Everybody happy with the minutes that were sent out?
Yes.
Great. Yes.
Yep, lovely. Okay, so item three, declarations of pecuniary and personal interests. Anybody? No. Nothing on that one. Item four, declarations of the party whip.
No.
Item five, questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16. We haven't got any this evening. And item six, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet. And there aren't any items of those this time either. So item seven, so Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. The following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 12th of March. So we start with Section A, so we've got the Corporate Delivery Plan 2020 to 2021. We've got the Chief Exec, lovely, and Suzanne Kinder and Helen Gretton. Thank you. Just before we start, which way would you prefer us to do questions? Because obviously there are certain sections as you go through it. Would you prefer us to do questions as we get to the end of each section or just wait till the end?
I think if we do the strategic document first and then take questions, because they're kind of two separate elements, and then I'll go through the corporate delivery plan and maybe if I do a theme at a time and take questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So the corporate strategy, the corporate plan as was approved by Cabinet back in January, by full council more recently. The corporate delivery plan and the strategic direction document sit underneath the corporate strategy. So the corporate delivery plan is the 1 year delivery plan for the 4 year corporate strategy. So as Suzanne mentioned, she'll go through that in a bit more detail in terms of the themes that are in there. In terms of the internal focus, the corporate strategy deals very much with outward focus, the things that we would do in the community as a council. The strategic direction document covers how we will deliver it on a more internal basis. So what we've set out, we've included in there the values, which are obviously in the corporate strategy as well. We've made reference to our operating model, and then there are some sections around the council, financial stability, customer service, our people, transformation, efficiency, commercialism and climate change. So we've made a range of statements about under each of those themes. So Rob, you might want to
I will be, thank you. So the document isn't a route map, it is a direction of travel. So it's a collection of statements which are relevant to the council in that they indicate a direction of travel that we're moving in as an organisation and help us respond to some of those contemporary issues that are mentioned in the document. It obviously dovetails with the corporate strategy document and the corporate delivery plan, but does also stand alone. And it's really more for internal use, so again, we're not intending to sort of summarise this and send it out to members of the public. The other documents are more forward-facing. But it's intended really to give you as members and also particularly employees a view on our direction of travel and what we might look like going forward into the future. So I'll leave it there and we can obviously pick up any questions.
Do you want to take questions on that part before we go into the corporate delivery plan?
Yeah, can do. Has anyone got any questions on that so far? Yeah, Councillor Parsons.
On page 41 under financial stability, the fifth bullet point, reduce our reliance on reserves to fund services. I'm slightly anxious of the words around that in terms of I want to replenish reserves. I don't want to reduce reliance on, or I want to zero reserves, because I feel that that's making a statement for the next 4 years that we're still going to be using reserves. And that may or may not be the truth in terms of the actual financial position. But in terms of a strategic direction of travel, yeah, I'm not sure whether I want that to be further down the goals of achieving not using our reserves by 2024, rather than just saying we're going to continue to reduce. I'm just keen to understand what our vision is for 2024. Are we still going, yeah, we're going to be tapping the reserves, boys, no problem here, or are we going to set a target which says we're going to stop using reserves and actually we're going to start to replenish our reserves?
Are you, Chair, do you want me to respond?
Yeah,
so thank you for the query. I think we're saying the same thing. It's the language we use to express it, isn't it? And I think what you're suggesting, Councillor Foss, is that we're more overt in saying that we want to stop using reserves and replenish them at some point in the future. The MTFS obviously sets out a broad suggestion of how we will use those reserves over the next few years and what reserves we'll have left at the end of that period. I'd be open to rewording that slightly in terms of reducing our reliance on reserves to fund services with a view in the future to replenishing reserves, if that's the direction that I believe you're suggesting.
Yeah, I think it is words. I'm cognizant of the financial situation and the accounts and the bits and pieces around there. I don't want this to be, it sounds offensive when I say I don't want us to hide behind, that's the wrong phrase, honestly. Best I can do with this stuff. I don't want us to be able to settle behind something that lowers our aspiration, that we're just going to reduce it. I want us to have our aspiration that we're very much working towards balanced budget, no reserves, and actually I'd like to put a bit back the other way, rather than we can live behind that quite comfortably for 4 years because we'll reduce our reliance, but we're still taking it. We're still tapping it, and once it's gone, it's gone. It's the words that I want to be able to hold as more accountable to the aspiration.
I think in terms of the MTFS, obviously we are still looking at using our reserves over that period to support our service delivery. Over the longer term, we certainly want to be in a position, how achievable it is will depend on what happens in the wider world of government, local government funding, but in the longer term we do want to cease the use of reserves to support frontline services and, you know, deploy them for other uses around investing to save or investing to earn, and hopefully, you know, build on those reserves over time. I don't know, Simon, if you've got a view on the wording there, but replenishing reserves over time would be something that we do want to do. It's a question of when, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I think the MTFS targets a balanced budget in 2022-23, so at that point we'd want to be neutral, but I think in the intervening period it is likely we would use reserves, so it's just a question of when we think that turning point may be and when we can get there. So replenish is certainly an aspiration I would support. I think it is something that's more likely to be the back end of the corporate plan if we were to get there, so that would certainly be a stretch target.
So in response then, I think it would be useful if we could say reduce our reliance on reserves to fund services and seek to replenish our reserves over time. Is that?
Yeah, it's definitely heading in the right direction. It's definitely, I want to be in that space. I don't want to be sitting in 4 years' time where, you know, the observation's been made that we perhaps have a balanced MTFS at 22-23. Our strategic document is 2024, and we're able to say at the end of 24 if we don't achieve that. Well, it doesn't matter because we said we were only going to reduce our reliance on, rather than we did it at 22-23 and we went on in 24. It's the time frames. If the MTFS was completely out of kilter beyond 25-28, I never stretched that far, but I wouldn't be so nervous about having that as an accountability statement.
Yeah. Through you, Chair, I think the accountability in terms of the council's finances will be more linked to the MTFS than the 5 or 6 bullet points in this document, but I think in terms of a direction of travel it will be sensible to add in the words around replenishing, but I think the other tools that sit alongside this document, including the MTFS and the corporate strategy, will give that reassurance that members will be kept updated on and able to monitor the council's reserves over a period of time and assess how likely we are in terms of the need to use them for supporting services, and how likely we are to be in a position to replenish some of those reserves that we're currently using this year, next, and going forward. So with your permission, Chair, perhaps we could look to amend the wording accordingly?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Okay, happy to do so.
Thank you. Any other questions? No?
No. I'll move over to the corporate delivery plan then. So this is what is we've normally known as the business plan. So we've changed the document this time to make it more strategic and sit directly under the corporate strategy. Open on page 17 with an introduction from the Chief Executive. It includes the revised values of the council. And then moving to page 18, we'll talk about the performance management framework, which is a new initiative within this plan. We haven't done that previously. We talk about our delivery boards and the board structures on page 19. And it just provides a financial statement again on page 20. So that just provides a bit of context as to where we're at and where we're heading over the annual period of this plan, and just to provide a bit more context for the reader. So I'll go on to the first theme, and then if it's okay, like we said, the questions at the end of each theme. So starting with caring for the environment on page 21. Heads of service have worked together to develop a plan. You'll see in the lead service area, if it's in bold, that's where a service is leading on something. If it's not bold, it's where they're just participating in something, just to make that clear. Start date and end date, we've tried to make it clear where something might not take the whole span of the year, so if it's going to finish earlier, and heads of service have noted that, to be accountable for that. And then we've got the corporate, a high level and a lower level action alongside the measurable success criteria, which we have in previous years for performance monitoring. So the first set of actions are around reducing carbon emissions from the council's operations and tackling climate change. So there are a number of things on there. Do you want me to go through each action individually, Chair, or should I
just do a
brief highlight?
Yeah.
That's fine. And then moving down on page 21, we've got some action in there around developing a green market plan in partnership with market traders to make our market trade more green and friendly in that sense. And we've got particular action there on page 22 about reviewing and assessing air quality across the borough as well, in line with DEFRA guidelines. Moving on to parks and open spaces, so we've got a number of things in there about restocking the outwards with native tree services, planting trees across the borough, the active role we're going to play in the forest partnership, the cemetery at Nampanton is also on there at the bottom of page 22. We then go on to protecting our environment on page 23, so that talks about the impact of waste and litter on the environment and the things we're going to do to combat that, improving the character of the residential area by temporary regulation 7 order removing the consent of letting boards. And then we also have a waste and recycling action in there about replacing the fleet and the flexibility of reducing carbon on our stock. So that is where we're up to at page 23 on the theme. And I appreciate I have just run through that very quickly. So it's just if there's any questions on that particular theme.
Yeah, I've got a couple, and then Councillor Draycott's got some too. So just on parks and open spaces, where we've got the 30,000 trees planted across the borough by March 2021, subject to lottery funding. Now, my understanding was that we pledged 100,000 trees, and I wasn't aware that any of it was linked to any lottery funding. So it's just whether these are incremental on top of the 100,000 or whether we're now looking for grant funding to cover the trees.
So, apologies, Chair. Okay. I can just confirm that subject to lottery funding is a minor error and
that
should be on
fine.
The
comment
below. Okay. So, formatting error there. So I will make sure that's moved down to the one below.
Yep.
Just to confirm, the 100,000 trees is over a number of years.
Yep.
30,000
yep.
wasn't
yep.
dedicated for year one.
No, that's fine.
That is an error, and I'll make sure that's amended,
Chair. Then I've just got one on protecting our environment. It was just to get a bit more information on it. So the review of the temporary regulation 7 order removing deemed consent for letting boards. I just wasn't 100% sure what that was.
I don't accurately know the facts about it, so I could provide ask for detailed information from planning and regeneration should you require it. But it is something that's already in place, and it's with regards to letting boards around the Loughborough area, particularly the student area, in terms of cleaning up the environment and removing those as appropriate in line with that order. I don't know if you have any additional.
Not a great deal of additional information. It's to do with the saturation of the letting board.
Yeah, which I guess is worse than Loughborough because of the student
accommodation. Exactly. So it's to do with the visual amenity associated with saturation of letting boards in certain locations. And my understanding is that that order allows us to require people to remove them. I think there's also a view that quite a number of them stay up for a very long time as part of the sort of general advertising of said letting agents rather than a need to let particular property. So I believe it's linked to trying to solve those issues.
Yeah, and then just one last one, just on the waste and recycling. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit disappointed we've only got one action there, which obviously is the fleet, which we know about. But we know that that's an area that we need to improve on, and I was expecting maybe to see a bit more info on that.
I can take that back to the service, and this is one. I think a lot of our waste and recycling targets are perhaps for other years within the corporate plan.
Yeah, because when we come to that later, I've got some more points later when you get to the targets on that as well.
So if we brought a four-year plan, obviously you would see a lot more in waste and recycling, such as the renewal of contracts and things like that. But for year one, there's nothing specific to highlight at such a corporate level. It will be in the services service plan and team plans, so that will be detailed in those plans as well.
Councillor Draycott.
Thank you, Chair. Three things, if I may. First of all, on the top of page 22, which is under climate change, regarding air quality in Charnwood, and it reads very good, in line with legislative requirements. However, as most of us know, there's a lot of concern about those requirements, and people's health are badly being affected, even with them matching those levels. I just wondered if Charnwood could be a bit more ambitious and look about a Charnwood standard for air quality. And I know that's not straightforward. I know it requires working with partners and some things we're not in control of. We've got a report coming to our next meeting about the latest air quality strategy report. So I just think we could have been a bit more ambitious there in view of the fact that a lot of illness and deaths are being caused even with being in line with current legislation. Second, to do with parks and open spaces, it again sounds very good, planting 30,000 trees, etc., but it's the difference between net and gross, because I actually had concern about the trees being cut down in the outwards. To me, a tree is a tree, and you're just replacing a tree with another tree. I know it's a native tree that it's being replaced with. To me, that's a bit of a cosmetic exercise. And where I live, we have the horrendous situation of the highway works on the A512 in Junction 23, where hundreds of trees and bushes have been chopped down for highway works, right? And it just looks like a moonscape, some of it now, right? So I just think a bit more realistic honesty is needed in the plan, because it looks good that we're planting all these extra trees, but there is, on the other side of things, trees actually being cut down in this borough, right? And so there just needs to be a touch of reality in there.
Yeah,
either that we do as much as what we can do to mitigate, you know, reduction in trees, but we try and kind of upload it and offset it by planting what have you. So I just think I feel quite strongly about that. And then the third point is to do with, also on the same block, about CCTV cameras at hotspots, which costs money, yet as a council we agree, for example, to increase the cost of bulk collection, when we know that fly tipping is at an horrendous level, and we're just adding to it by charging people for bulk collection. So I think we need to kind of be looking at how we've arrived at having to pay for CCTV cameras, and we have some fault in that because as a council, we've, and this is just an example, started to charge for bulk collection. So I just, you know, again, just being kind of critical. But they're the three things on that section, Chair.
If I may, Chair, on the last point, I don't 100% know, but I don't think they're new CCTV cameras. I think what's new about this action plan is the new three hotspot locations. So where monitoring has been undertaken and those have been identified, I think that is the new initiative for this particular plan rather than the CCTV cameras themselves. A point taken of what you're saying, just to provide a bit of clarity.
So they're what, mobile CC, so they can be moving around?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions on that section?
No.
Yeah.
If you'd like me to, Chair, just a response really then. So in terms of the air quality issues, I think we'd be happy to have a look at that. I don't feel at the moment that we'd be in a position to put anything into the corporate delivery plan in terms of an additional Charnwood standard because we don't have such a thing established yet. But if there is feedback around what that might look like and work already being discussed, we can consider it. We need to be really careful about it to make sure that we will have some teeth to go with such a standard or what the costs of implementing such a standard would be. So I think at the moment the prudent and correct thing to do is to stick with the legislative requirements and use those, but of course we can consider those, as you say, in terms of what does that actually mean in terms of impact on health. And I think there may then be a role in terms of this council if we don't feel that those legislative standards are good enough to feed that back to the government. So that might be another option as opposed to or alongside a local standard. In terms of the net tree, sort of, I think that's a useful thing to explore, so we can have a look at that. I don't know what the position is on that, but we've certainly looking at net biodiversity gain as part of some of the requirements through planning. So for example, where there is loss of habitat or biodiversity through planning, the amount replaced versus the amount lost and the net position is something that we should be considering, and we'll see if we can find whether there is a net figure on trees. It may be difficult to know exactly of all the trees that are felled in the borough. Some will be more obvious to us, some are protected, some aren't, but I know that we do take it very seriously and officers are constantly monitoring that. In fact, I signed an order on Friday, an emergency tree preservation order for some woodland that was being cut down on Friday, which officers had brought to their attention. So we are willing to act and do act on those sorts of issues when they arise. In terms of the bulky waste collection, obviously there's a review to see how that has panned out. I would just comment though that fly tipping is a national issue and some of the drivers for fly tipping are more to do with disposal at sites, recycling sites, and the ability for traders, and it's quite often commercial fly tipping as opposed to residential property fly tipping. So we'll have to wait and see as part of that review exactly what impact the bulky waste charging has had. But irrespective of that, I think it's a useful thing for us to have these mobile cameras to help us with enforcement in hotspot areas.
Thank you. Councillor Parsons?
Just on the air quality issue. So as I read at the top of page 22.B, I read that as saying we're going to take away the air quality management area where there is sustained compliance. So when someone's doing good and it's just normal and it's fine, we just remove it as an air quality issue. The reverse of that with regard then to the assessment, obviously we have the issue of the waste disposal, the waste to energy unit. Would it not be bolder for us to start to think about saying, well, once we've done our air quality review and assessment, what we might want to do is say we're going to not accept increasing levels of things like sub 2.5 micron particulates and things like that. So we set standards which protect us from our baseline assessment. Is there not something where we can be bolder? Because there's obviously, you will be aware, there's a huge amount of work going on around that whole issue. And it worries. There's a vast array, I would suggest, of competent research around sub 2.5 micron particulates. And we would be on safe ground to say we don't want an increase on the threshold, I think. I think we would be on relatively safe ground to say, having done our baseline assessment, let's say, as a borough, we don't want an increase in sub 2.5 microns blowing across the town. And that seems to me that would be something safe for us to say, without breaking any legislative frameworks, without breaching anything that's going to cause us concern, but it gives us something to stand behind in future.
Through you, Chair. Yep. I think we're going to need to get an expert in the room to answer that, because it's beyond my technical ability to say whether we'd be able to stand to it or not. So I think if Councillor Parsons is happy, we'll take that back to our colleagues in Environmental Health and ask them for a bit of guidance in relation to the points.
Yeah, we do have someone coming to the meeting in our next meeting, so we can pick it up there. And
I'm happy to do that as well, certainly. I'm interested.
Yeah, by all means, if you would like to contact officers, that's fine. But I think in terms of this document, it's whilst we'll be finalising it through cabinet process and so on, it is a document we can amend and adapt over the course of the year and obviously into next year as well.
Thank you. Happy to move on?
Yeah.
Yep.
So thank you. I'll whiz through this section then. So Healthy Communities, page 24. We have a range of actions around Safer Charnwood. So that comes from ASB through to crime initiatives, preventing violence and supporting victims, safeguarding training through to food safety risks, food allergen risks, implementing new food safety standards, licensing controls, and also enforcement activities as well. So there's quite an array of activity within the Safer Charnwood theme. On page 26, we then go on to talk about supporting our communities. So there's things there about the Armed Forces Covenant and the continued support to our three community hubs. Healthy and happy residents, participation levels in various physical activity, focusing on specific groups and particular vulnerable groups as well. And then there's also an action in there about operating our leisure centres and gaining the Quest accreditation. Apologies. And then moving on to the bottom of page 27, we have all our actions around housing. So that talks about developing a housing revenue account, developing including consultation of a tenancy policy, delivering a programme of works around kitchen, bathrooms and heating systems, meeting the needs of households on the housing register by bringing empty homes back into use, and then we also have an action in there around supporting the reduction of homelessness as well. So again, a whistle-stop tour, but if there's any questions.
I've got a couple again. So just on page 24, so we've got the crime prevention campaigns. So we've got 10 crime prevention campaigns or events delivered. Should we be looking at targeting attendance rather than the number of events? Because obviously we can hold an event, but if people don't turn up and hear what we've got to say, then the message isn't getting out. I just thought maybe in collaboration with the number of events, we should be sort of trying to put a figure on that.
I think that may be something I have to take back to the service and seek their guidance on. So for instance, if we hold the there's usually a joint thing with the police and the fire service in the town centre, that'd be very hard to capture attendance and actually create a value on that. But I can speak with the service and see if there's something that can be done.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, Chair. I think with there being campaigns and events, there's obviously something where we might perhaps hold something at the town hall and we want people to come along, perhaps a bit like today. But equally, we might have a campaign about students coming back and crime preventions, where actually counting the number of people might not be appropriate. So I think there's a mix there where it might be appropriate for some and perhaps not appropriate for others.
I think it's also worth noting that some of these will be media campaigns as well, so Twitter or what have you, so they may, again, may not be quantifiable.
Then on healthy and happy residents, so we've got 5,000 total attendances and 550 individual participating in the programme, so that's the increased adult participation levels. My question is, how do we decide where these activities are delivered within the borough? And are we looking to utilise new community centres, halls and sports facilities that have come on board in the last sort of 12, 24 months? And should we be targeting areas that aren't near our leisure centres? So obviously where residents can get to the leisure centres, you've got areas that don't have a leisure centre in their town. Should we then be looking for mobile activities kind of to help those areas?
again, to my knowledge, I don't have all the information,
but
that does include mobile activities as well. So, for instance, maybe going to an older person's facility or home and doing chair exercises there and things like that. And it does encompass a wide range of vulnerable groups as well and underrepresented groups. In terms of locations, I couldn't give you exact locations, but I could certainly find that information for you.
Yeah, it's just understanding the thought process behind where the activities happen.
Just in addition, if I may, Chair, so my understanding that we do need some more feedback is that they have quite a good map of where underrepresented groups are and different segments of society that aren't engaging, and they do, as heard, reach out into those areas. So we can probably provide you a bit more information, but I do believe that they're doing that and in quite a sort of evidence fashion as well.
Yeah, lovely, thank you. And then just one last one. Just under housing, the 50 empty homes brought back into use. Now, my understanding is that we've already achieved 50 homes, and I'm wondering why we've not increased the target.
So I think it's an additional 50 homes on top of the ones that we've already achieved to date.
Yeah.
So going forward. So it's to do with our capacity then to whether we could do 60, 70 or 80, because we're not changing the level of resource that we have.
We'll have learned processes in those first 50, so in theory the efficiency going forward would be slightly improved.
I think in theory that's true, but and it is relatively limited knowledge, but having spent some time with the empty homes officer and seen some of the examples we've worked, they are all very, very different, and it depends on the nature of the empty property, whether there's an owner, a landlord that can be spoken to, what their circumstances are. So I think we can perhaps get you a bit more information, but I think the 50.
I'm not keen to increase the target.
No, I think 50 can be quite challenging, to be honest, Chair. I think it won't be an easy thing to deliver. I don't know if there's any.
Potentially, the low hanging fruit may well already
gone.
Yeah.
So it's a challenging target, I would suggest.
Okay. Councillor Parsons?
Just for clarification, on page 27, it says we're going to do 180 bathrooms. And on page 68 says we're going to do 105 in the coming year. And I might be missing something about the discontinuity between those two numbers.
Sorry, where was the second
On page 27, it says 180 bathrooms.
Yeah, and on the second.
And on the HRA plan, we're doing 105 on page 68. I'm just checking on the discrepancy between those two.
I'll look to my colleague in the room if that's okay.
Checking the intervening period.
We'll come back to that one.
Thank
you. Councillor Bolton. Thank you. Antisocial behaviour. In my ward, there is a lot of antisocial behaviour, but it just isn't reported. And I, in the 10 months I've been a councillor, I have worked very, very hard to encourage all my residents to report anything, no matter how small it may be. I would like to see something in here about encouraging people to report antisocial behaviour. Because I think it's all very well having percentages and numbers and things, but if you're not actually starting with a complete baseline of data, that just concerns me. You know, and I know through the number of emails and Facebook messages I get from residents just how much is going on. And then when I liaise with the police and my local PCSO, oh well, Jill, only 3 incidents were reported in the last quarter. But I know I've had emails of 23 or whatever. So anything that we could do, and I do, sorry to cut a long story short, I do post stuff on social media every 5 to 6 weeks reminding my residents that they need to do this because the police use this data to target their resources to the most exposed areas, etc, etc. So that's my point.
If I may,
Jack. Yes.
That also links to the 10 crime prevention initiatives, what we discussed earlier. So I know that one, at least one of those will be about ASB and the promotion of reporting. And so those two do link together in some vein. But I can certainly report that back to the service, and perhaps there could be an inclusion in their service plan about that promotion. But I certainly know at least one of the crime prevention campaigns will be on ASB.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Bailey.
Oh, thank you. It was about the Leisure Centre Quest accreditation, difficult yes. thing to say. I presume there's something in the contract then to incentivise or carrot or stick, depending on which way you look at it, to make sure that the contractor does do that in the next 12 months. Would be one question, more of a question stroke statement in that respect. And excuse my ignorance on the Quest accreditation, funny to say. I presume that's also the standard of the facilities, not just the customer service part. Because, for example, the standard of the changing rooms in Loughborough aren't particularly fantastic at the minute. So I was just wondering, it was just a bit of a query really around that sort of how they're going to get there.
Okay. Through you, Chair. So I'll have to check on the contract issues as to what's stipulated, so I don't know for sure. There is usually a link to sort of independence quality assurance, whether it's written in bold in the contract, I don't know, so we'll check on that. It's in their interest and our interest that they do go for Quest quality assurance, and most leisure centres worth their salt do go for it. It's kind of an industry standard. It does include customer service and it does include the whole experience, and it's quite an intensive and invasive assurance process run independently of the council and the operator on a national basis with a whole range of quality standards. So we'll need to double check on the contract, but in terms of the quality issues, it's both the customer service and the actual experience in terms of the facilities that are there and the quality of the facilities and the cleanliness, etc.
I'm just conscious that obviously we're coming up to renewal potentially in the next few years, so if it's not in there, it probably needs to go into the next contract.
We could certainly love to do that if it's not in there.
Okay. And Councillor Baines?
Just wanted to talk about the prevention of violence and exploitation while supporting victims. I was going to ask you about what the two initiatives are going to be. Now, you've half answered that. You talked about ASB. What's the other one likely to be?
With regard to ASB, it was probably one of the 10 crime preventions, the one above.
Okay.
I think I can't answer that on behalf of the service, but I do know they haven't been included at this stage because they align with the Community Safety Partnership, and the Community Safety Partnership haven't yet defined their plan and what their priorities are for the forthcoming year. So we're almost a bit chicken and egg in this sense. So unfortunately, I can't tell you what those two are because they're still being in delivery.
I can't either. But what I could add is that the Violence Reduction Network, which is the Leicestershire body funded by the Home Office, will have an event today, which I think you were alluding to a short while ago, where we've had lots of police practitioners, lots of county council practitioners, borough council practitioners and voluntary sector practitioners at the town hall looking at the issues associated with youth violence and our contextual safeguarding model. And there will be, I think, some quite well-evidenced consideration about the types of project that we'll use. It is likely to be linked to some of the most pressing and high-risk issues that we have in terms of county lines and some of those types of issues. The government funding around the violence reduction networks does give us an awful lot of opportunity to work across the county as well, so we need to link in with what's happening at that level. So we can provide you more information as it develops, I think.
Well, I'd like to recommend that you might, in my other life as a professor at the University of Leicester, we've won funding as part of four universities, the East Midlands Police and Academic Collaboration, it's called MPAC. And the focus of MPAC is going to be violent crime reduction. And that's quite a lot of, that's quite a fair chunk of funding, working with Leicestershire Police, obviously. So I think it might be worth thinking into that.
Yeah, I'd be disappointed if the Violence Reduction Network isn't involved in that, because the police are very heavily involved and the Violence Reduction Network has to produce a strategic needs analysis based on academic. They've got public health professionals working in there, they're drawn from academia, so there's actually a number of people seconded into the Violence Reduction Network from those backgrounds to produce this work. So I'd hope, if it's involving the police already, that there's a strong link into that, and we will take information from the Violence Reduction Network to inform our local practice.
But look at MPAC too, is what I'm saying.
Councillor Parsons?
Yeah, it's a general comment, but it's it's easy to just highlight a couple on this page. On page 27, I think Mr. Kidd will know what I'm about to say, as I said it before previously, in terms of setting success criteria where we can find areas to be a little harder. You know, if I look at the bottom, I'm continuing to meet the housing needs of households on the housing register. My measure of success is less people on the housing register at the end of the year, not that we brought homes back in. Similarly, above that, to set out the investment requirements necessary to manage, maintain, invest in the council housing stock and how this will be resourced. The policy is, I know the policy is part of the journey, but the success is that all our houses are better. And if I go through the whole document, I can pick out a lot of places where running the campaign is the measure of success, not the impact we've had. And I really want to see impact. I've referenced it over the years I've sat here, and we've had sort of ups and downs. I can definitely remember a year or two ago complimenting Mrs. Kinder on the report that came, because we'd hardened up on a number of the what I would call impact measurable success criteria, rather than we're trying to reduce crime. Our measure of success is we ran three campaigns. It is a measure, perhaps, but it's not what I think the public would see as the impact on what we're trying to do. They would want to know we've reduced it, or we've done something with it, rather than sort of continued the success of the process, if I might put it in that phrase. And I can sort of run through, if you run through every one of these with an eye on, is that just like the process? It's, you know, in layman's terms, I would say we're calling success just getting the job done that we said we were going to do in the process. And I know that makes it look right, but at times I think, again, if we're going into a new world, and I want us to be bolder, I want us to stand behind some things and say there were less people on the housing. The houses were all better. We did X, Y, Z. And not just we did the policy in the end, but we didn't produce the policy. It's having that ability to just give that impact and stand behind that a bit more.
I think some of them are, I think it's fair to say, one year of a 4-year plan. So in terms of quantifying, it may not be till year four that we're able to do that hard and fast impact analysis, what you're describing. But certainly maybe as if you're happy, Chair, for an action for the corporate delivery plan of next year, when in development, to look
at it. I guess just look at it with an eye to it. It's with an eye to what it means for people. Policy doesn't mean much for people in terms of talking to them. We need to go out and the success is we wrote the policy on time. I want to say we did this, and there's 10 less people on the waiting list. There's 50 more houses that we have got up to a better standard. There are bang, 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 bang. I recognise it's a balance, and I don't want us to go backwards after getting us moving in the right direction over a couple of years.
Okay. Councillor Baines?
I was just going to say that the Minister of Defence always talks about measures of performance, just to back up this, talks about measures of performance and then measures of success. And these, I think Jeff's right, Councillor Parsons is right, these are measures of performance rather than measures of success. But I've also seen it defined elsewhere in behavioural change campaigns, and I'm going to miss one, there's four actually, outcomes, outputs, outtakes, and then there's another one somewhere. It's probably inputs. And there is actually government guidance on measuring success. And I think it will be worth looking at that. I could probably dig it out from somewhere, if necessary.
Yeah.
I think there are valid points there in terms of trying to make sure we tighten up on those and clarify the difference between outcomes and outputs, which I think is a useful distinction, particularly in the local government sector. I think if we take into account all of our performance management framework and customer satisfaction levels, some of the wider sort of feedback that we get, then we're able, hopefully, to point to some of those outcomes in terms of improvements for people. Some of these are more about outputs, you know, so we've done X of these events. What's always challenging, and it's not just challenging now given the level of resources, it's always been challenging, is being able to evidence the and how much time and effort, and being proportionate with it, about how much time and effort we put into these things to be able to really evidence the outcomes. And over time, where something has become well accepted that it has a beneficial impact, and we've refined some of that to know that we're being efficient in terms of doing these campaigns, and we know it has a beneficial impact that is more than the inputs, then we probably won't want to do a great deal more in terms of putting a big evaluation process around it. But where we're doing newer things, where we're investing money and time into something that we're less confident has got a pedigree of success, then we would want to put more of those sorts of evaluation mechanisms around it. I think quite a lot of the activity in here is things that is tried and tested and to some degree just output based. But where we are seeking to deliver an evidence outcomes, then we need to be able to say how we're going to do that.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Any further questions on that section?
Move on. Oh, yeah, can you just try and answer
Oh, yes,
sure. This question.
Yep, yep.
Do you want to come back the answer, Peter?
Yeah, certainly. In the plan, to connect bathrooms, and then in the capital investment report that you have on page 68, there's 108 bathrooms, well, there's 105 bathrooms and 75 level access showers, which together
so they go in the same
I've just broken them down a little bit more on the so the numbers are consistent.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, moving forward, I will go a bit faster if that's okay. A thriving economy. So we've got a number of things there under economic growth, such as around the enterprise zone, local development scheme, preparation of the Charnwood local plan, working with partners to support the delivery of the strategic growth plan, promoting the Charnwood brand, regulatory business support and advice, working in partnership with the LEP and other business organisations. Then under towns, we have delivered the agreed improvements for Bedford Square, establishing a scheme of capital works for the Shepstead Town Centre, development of a lanes and lighting strategy for the town, Loughborough Town, worked with partners to prepare a town deal for an investment plan for Loughborough. There's some work in there around the reopening of the Carillon Tower. Some improvements to the town hall, so making it a more attractive venue for visitors and making it more safe for visitors. Development of a placemaking strategy and delivery of that with regards to tourism in the borough, and then also some work about creating a plan for our Loughborough markets and making them more modern within the 21st century. So again, very quickly, what was there any questions?
Okay, I'll try and whiz through mine. So first one is just a general one across sort of the economy. Are we making any provisions for economic downturn due to coronavirus? We need to think about it.
Through you, Chair.
Yeah.
We haven't made any specific provision in this document, in this section, but there are some sections in the towards the end of the document that talk about dealing with resilience issues and civil contingency issues, of which coronavirus falls into that bracket. We are setting up a community impact group under a wider structure of responses to coronavirus, which will have a look and talk with our local businesses and community groups about the potential impacts arising from coronavirus. I have to say that really we will need national government to lead on that. We'll wait and see obviously what the budget provides in terms of support and potential reliefs for the escalating situation, and we may well be a facilitator or an enabler of local businesses and community groups to access some of that. And then of course if the situation changes further, we do have the ability to reconsider our local provision on perhaps various support services to businesses. Although in the short to medium term, I think it's going to be very much focused on providing our critical services before we can get into the recovery phase. So it's a very dynamic situation, as we would say.
Yeah, thank you. Just on the markets, we're looking at increasing the number of traders. Have we ever looked at pop-up markets? So obviously the Loughborough market's really well established, but whether we've looked at taking the market almost to some of our other towns and villages, like once a month or once a quarter, and see if that encourages more traders, gives them a chance to kind of test things out.
I don't have the answer to that. If I'm being
fine. It was just a question, really, whether it's something.
It's a useful suggestion. We'll have to check with the markets team and Sylvia as head of services to what the ability for us to do that is. There may be some issues with the market charter. Of course, Loughborough has a market charter, but some areas may not. So there may be some issues with the actual charter and the ability to do it. But we could give it some high-level consideration, I think, and feedback to you.
Yeah, sure. And then the last one is to do with improve the public realm in our towns. I'm really disappointed with the wording. We're only talking about our towns, but there are a lot of villages in Charnwood, and if we're not looking to improve our public realm in the villages, we're literally talking about helping Loughborough and Shepshed again. And we did talk about this when the corporate plan came around and said that we needed to be looking after the other areas in Charnwood. And to not even mention villages at all in that section, I think is wrong. I think we need to be saying improve the public realm in our towns and villages. And I think there needs to be a section, whether it says that we will work to help facilitate small-scale public realm improvements in our villages, whether we say that we will help with grants for areas. I think there has to be something in that section that says that actually we care about areas outside of Shropshire and Loughborough.
Yeah, so happy to try and find a form of words that shows that we do care for those villages alongside the towns. It is important that we don't leave them out of the consideration. I think the difference in terms of the wording and where it's come from is that we've got schemes current in the towns. I suppose that in some way backs up your point in that why are there no schemes for other areas. So I think what we'd need to do is construct some wording around exploring opportunities to support other local centres, villages, whatever we want to describe them as. But I wouldn't want to be in a position where we committed to something that we haven't put in the capital plan or have no external funding for. But I think we can certainly add something in there that
I think
that allows us
from
to
experience
explore.
What tends to happen is if it isn't in this plan and you take a suggestion to someone, you just get stonewalled with it isn't in the plan. And we're only here to deliver the plan. So if there's no wording in there, then I just worry that outside of those areas, it's we're delivering what's in this section, and if your area isn't one of those towns, then it's a non-starter.
Okay, well, I think there's not much capacity left in the organisation, but I think there's probably enough capacity left in that particular section.
I'm not talking
about
grand plans.
And I think it would have to be programmed. So one of the things that Suzanne mentioned earlier and Helen's mentioned previously is that this is a four-year corporate strategy. This is year one. So we're going to have to put quite a lot of effort into securing the £25 million, or as much of it as we can for Loughborough Town Deal. We've got the Shepshed scheme, which will take up a lot of time. But I think even with those, there is still an option to provide some sort of update on how we may, going forward, look at supporting some of those other local centres. But just don't expect too much in terms of a physical output from that in year one. But it's something that if we put in the plan now, perhaps we can build to and develop over the years two and three.
Yeah.
Is that okay, Chair?
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. On page 30, towns, can you just clarify the town deal investment plan? I thought was government finance to help reinvigorate town centres because of the issues that are ongoing. But it seems that money seems to be in use for items that were in the council's master plan. The master plan had kind of stalled because we've had a number of presentations on it, and most of the work that was in it couldn't go ahead because the county council didn't have the money to fund most of it. So it kind of stalled and stopped, but I've got those things back off the shelf. Is that what the town deal investment fund is going to be used for? Because I thought it was a different purpose.
So the town deal investment board will need to consider the government's prospectus, which has three aims to it, relating to connectivity, skills and urban regeneration. There may well be some opportunity that some of the things that we want to see delivered through master plan, either county or borough or private sector schemes, will fit within that prospectus and can go forward. It's inevitable that some of the schemes going forward need to be reasonably well developed because of the government timetable. So it is not going to be an exclusive match that schemes that either we or the county or other partners have, if you like, in the sort of the list of projects that exist at the moment to the town deal, but some will move forward through that process, I would hope. There is no shortlist at the moment. We're still at the process of creating a long list of projects, but I don't think the two things are incompatible from my understanding of the government guidance.
Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Bolton?
Two things, please. Firstly, to build on what Councillor Rattray was saying, I replied to the request for ideas as a resident, and one of the key things I think we really need to work hard on is the market, which has been mentioned already. I was speaking to a market trader who has been on the market for donkey's years on Saturday, and he is so frustrated by the level of cancellations because his business is such that he cannot just pack up and move to another town when it's cancelled in Loughborough. So frustrated that he's seriously considering not continuing with the market. So I think we need to be thinking much more laterally about what we can do. And these are probably two completely impractical ideas, but I will suggest them anyway. One, if there is any way that we could bring some overhead cover into place around certain parts of the market so that we're not concerned about market stalls, you know, blowing and hitting people and what have you. And the second thing, which is probably the most impractical, is when it's a really rubbish day, can't we offer a town hall to people to actually bring their stalls into and trade? And I don't know the answers, and I don't expect you to give me the answers, but they're just two thoughts. And my second point was, I'm not on the town deal team, my co-councillor is, but I'm hoping that as we move through that process, and Rob, you were talking about the long list, that actually there may be some fantastic ideas that come up that I would hope, while not being able to be built in perhaps to this year's plan, would certainly be taken forward, because you're going to get so many different people involved and the public, and I think some fabulous ideas coming through. So those were really statements rather than questions.
Yep. I can have a go at answering a couple of those points. I think in terms of the cancellations to the market, most of those are due, as you've alluded to the weather, and particularly the wind. There is some discussions ongoing around how we might use some of the already existing plans to deal with some of the electrical issues, to also look at anchor points within the town centre that would help us anchor down some of the market stalls. I think the issue of a sort of permanent cover would need to be very carefully thought through in terms of its location and impact, particularly in relation to things like the fair and other events and how those would be compatible. But I don't think that, you know, that is something that officers have talked to other colleagues about internally, externally. In terms of the town hall, I just don't think it's probably big enough to cope with, and how would we choose who went in, and it's the practicalities of getting in through the doors are probably not very compatible with the type of market. I'm not writing it off, but I'm not encouraged by how we would make it happen, shall we say, in terms of a practical point of view, Councillor Bolton. I can't at the moment, I'll talk to colleagues, but I can't conceive of how, knowing what I know about the town hall operations and the market operation, I don't think the two are particularly compatible. But the point I think you're making is not just necessarily limited to the town hall, is it? It could be one about other locations.
Empty shops.
Yeah, so that, there might be other opportunities.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay, thank you.
And then lastly, we have the fourth and final theme of your council. So under this we have a number of initiatives around our customer service, so in terms of development of an engagement and access strategy, monitoring customer satisfaction, so that's about implementing a council-wide satisfaction monitoring on a single question approach. We then have a range of actions under transformation efficiency, which very much feeds into the first document, which Helen presented to you. So about developing a framework for the council, undertaking a range of service reviews across the council, work on the social behaviour teams to create a more coordinated view of working, completion of a digital inclusion project, Procurement and rollout of a planning, strategic housing and regulatory services software system, so that's a back office software system. Improving digital access to a range of customers, and also reviewing our IT and our major systems and developing an ICT strategy to move forward within the organisation. We then have an entire section on developing our staff, so to undertake a range of surveys and analyse the results of those in order to create a better workforce. Developing a new people strategy for the organisation, so the current one runs out this year. Developing and implementing staff and leadership competencies, developing a leadership programme and a new personal review process as well. Also actions around reviewing and increasing the council's approach to agile and smart working, which you mentioned the coronavirus earlier, that might be a key driver for this particular action, supporting staff health and wellbeing within the workplace as well. So there is the workplace wellbeing survey, which was undertaken at late last year, and utilising the results of this to create a programme of works moving forward. We have a section on financial stability, so maintaining a balanced budget for the financial year. Somebody mentioned earlier about the review of the leisure centre contracts and considering any issues arising and any approval required regarding that. With regards to commercialism, so we've got things about a commercial and enterprise strategy, reviewing the council's land and building assets, revisiting a business case for building commercial residential property for sale or rent, developing a treasury management strategy, and completing a feasibility study of the capital plan asset strategy. Enhancing and continuing to develop the trade waste expansion project, so increasing the number of commercial waste customers against current baseline. And then under the Wong Charmwood section, we have supporting the boundary review of the Local Government Boundary Commission, so that's something we're going to be supporting them with over the next 12 months. Development of a new communication strategy, and you mentioned earlier about, I think Rob mentioned the resilience partnership, so some of the things that were mentioned under resilience, such as coronavirus and things, are going to be developed under working with the resilience partnership. That's the end of that section.
Yeah. I've just got one question. Just on the trade waste, do we think that the fact that we're only offering trade waste and not recycling, that that's putting an awful lot of businesses off, the fact that we're not offering dual service? I think most commercial operations would offer both. I think that that would be a reason why people might not take that up.
So I think that part of the issue that we need to consider in terms of scaling up trade waste is our ability to offer that type of service, the frequency of the service, and obviously that relates to the amount of capacity we have within the current contract. So we'll feed that back to Matt Bradford, his head of service, and get some more details, but I know it's a known issue that he is grappling with.
Councillor Parsons.
Can I just ask on the Treasury item, is the Treasury Management, is this just words and titles, but the Treasury Management Strategy, that's the statutory document that we have to produce every year now? Or is that the new combined capital strategy? I always get the wrong way around.
I'm going to throw that one over my shoulder, I think, Chair.
What's the new one?
So we are required to do a capital strategy, yeah, which should contain the Treasury Management Strategy. So Treasury Management Strategy has always been, well, always, but that historically that has been a statutory document according to this code of practice, and the capital strategy is a new requirement which sort of subsumes the Treasury Management Strategy within it. So the short answer is they're both required.
I feel that that particular item, and again, please don't think I'm trying to be rude, I feel like it's a non-item for a delivery plan. It's what we do anyway by rote. We have to do it. The final strategy is agreed and published. Yes, we have to do that. We're going to develop a strategy with regard to our attorney. It seems like just a rote action rather than something amongst the delivery plan, if that makes sense to you. And I'm not sure it lives in this document in that way, because how am I going to measure it? We did what we have to do because we have to do it. It doesn't feel like it's part of the plan to me to have that in there. It doesn't seem to fit in the context of this particular document.
have no particular strong desire to see it retained in there. Simon, what do you have a view as to whether it needs to be retained in there?
No, I think to be honest, a lot of this is about presenting a suitable balance within the document around services and demonstrating responsibility and important actions. Certainly relaxed about its inclusion or otherwise.
Anyone else got any views on that? No.
Okay, well, quite happy to remove that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Okay.
It's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
going to
be looked at by budget, it's going to be looked at by audit committee, it's going to be thoroughly engaged in.
Anything else?
So I'm not going to go through all the indicators individually, but just to highlight that, as requested by Cabinet previously, we have created two different sections, one for direct indicators and one that the Council indirectly impacts as well, just to create that difference. There are a number of existing indicators in there, which we've had previously, but there are also some new ones as well. So we've got, say, like KI18 about CO2, reduction of CO2, and KI19 about percentage of air quality monitoring. They're new ones. Whereas some of them are existing ones that we've done year on year for trend analysis. So it's just if there's any questions on those.
Yep, Councillor Parsons.
I have two. First on K4A, K14A and K14B. Why do we feel the need to put a stretch target in this document for that one particular item?
Recycling.
K14A and K14B.
The view there has been that the national target of 50% is something that the council has set year on year on year on year and not been able to deliver. So the view has been that it's a rather false target, and that unless we change substantially the way in which we collect by investing in something like food waste, we aren't ever going to reach that. But it is the target set by government for...
So we're showing our target, really.
So we are showing our target, but notionally still not dismissing the government's aspirational target of 50%.
Okay. On page 38, on K1, 13, 14 and 15, why, when the measurement of determination is significantly small, 8 weeks, 13 weeks, are we unable to produce quarterly statistics on that?
We need to go back on that.
We've put it as an annual target because it came, I can't remember which committee it came from, but it was asked for as an annual target from a particular committee, which is why we've included those three in here. However, I can confirm that on a quarterly basis we do report on it anyway, I give 3% at every quarter with regards to those, so there's no reason why it couldn't be a quarterly target.
It seems unusual for something that's got that smaller time frame that it doesn't come back reported against. I can understand why perhaps in the first quarter, because there's a 13-week time lag to the second quarter, but I struggle with an 8-week turnaround that we can't report
targets in. Genuinely is down to, I think, what was asked at the particular committee at the time, but we do report on it quarterly, so I see no reason why we couldn't.
Just check on what the committee was, in case there's a some sort of resolution that we just need to
understand it. It would be interesting to know why.
The information's clearly there.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm just picking up on KO4B that Councillor Parsons has already mentioned. I understand obviously the 50% is the national target, and our current rate is at 44%, which is, I'm guessing, why it's just been put in for every quarter is 44%. But again, a bit disappointed to see that we're not trying to stretch that. 50% is where we need to be, and understandably we're quite a way off it, but there are things that are being done and things that need to be done to get that closer to the 50%, and to say actually we're quite happy with 44, because that's sort of what that says to me.
I guess that's, so there's interpretation there, isn't it? I think 44% is the minimum level that we're happy with, so that's our sort of baseline target, and our stretch target is 50, and we want to obviously close from 44 to 50. But again, without something significantly changing, either behaviours or collection or the packaging, etc., it's difficult to change that 44% figure by any significant magnitude. We could perhaps have a further conversation with the head of service and portfolio holder and others to see if there's anything to do to try and move that forward. But the way it's been set at the moment is a sort of 44% is where our sort of standard figure is, and if it deviates below that, then we know we've got an issue that we need to address, and anything that we can do to get closer to 50 is a positive. I think sometimes some of these sort of set targets, it's you need to actually look at the graph and the performance data and see what's happening and trend lines, rather than just what's there in terms of the flat percentages. So we can have a conversation with Matt and the portfolio holder, but I'm not sure.
That's half a day business.
Yes, I know. I'm just trying to not get into detail. That was all.
Thank you, through chair. I know there's a panel
really
looking at the recycled rate at the moment. And I think Matt, particularly, I spoke to Matt today about something else. We were talking about the potential new targets. And I think, as Rob has mentioned, you know, it is the government aspirational target, 50%. Unless the it could well change because the environmental bill. So it could well change with the impact of that, because that's not only going to impact on us, you know, potentially food waste collections. We have to see how that will pan out. But it also impacts on wholesalers and the distribution companies which supply the materials. So it could well impact on a positive note, but we just have to wait and see. And I know we're looking forward to the panel, any panel suggestions as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions on those? No? Yep. That's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
okay, so if we can move on to 7B, so we've got approach to commercialisation.
I'll stay here, but I'll grab a water if that's it.
Yeah, of course.
Chair, can I just respond to Cathy Bailey's question or query about the West regarding the Rose Centre? Is it, just for clarity, is it, did you wonder how Quest works or how we apply to gain the Quest?
A bit of both, really, as to what incentivizes or either carrot or stick is there for that
it's a mix of both
for the contractor to get to that standard.
Well, actually, there's so many KPIs within the contract, which is the same with all of our contracts.
Yeah.
And regarding Quest, that really works on mystery shopping and feedback from the participants of the leisure centres. So it's a mix of things. I know, you know, there's a quality assurance around cleanliness. You know, you have issues with cleanliness and whatever aspect of the leisure centres there is any issues. But there is so many KPIs. I think from a council point of view, from a procurement perspective, when we're looking at major contracts, is that they're so tightly written and there's repercussions if they don't achieve what they need to achieve. So I think as a, you know, so as committee regarding leisure centres, you know, you should have assurance that, you know, whatever there is issue, there is an issue, then it's always addressed. But Quest, particularly in all three of our leisure centres now, which is really good. It's a very stringent process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you have to kick off.
Absolutely. So, do you want to introduce it, Simon? Oh, how was that?
You're in a bit
sorry, sip the water for a minute.
I think you need a bit of a rest.
Yeah.
So, just the first thing to say, I'll just do a very, very brief overview. So, just the first thing to say on this, I think I have participated to some extent, and we are very aware of the commercialisation scrutiny panel that's due to report very soon. I think that will come to, I think the outcomes and the recommendations of that will come to Cabinet in April. So I think I've had a look at the nascent recommendations. I've not seen the final version, but I think I'm hopeful there's quite a good correlation between what the panel's thinking and what a lot of these reflected in here. I think there could be some more detail, so obviously we'll do a more detailed response in April, so I think we can look forward to that. Just in